Topo Maps Plus is one of the world's leading backcountry navigation apps, turning your phone into a fully functional GPS unit. Backroads Maps Books is proud to offer maps as an in-app purchase for Topo Maps. This makes it super easy to download mobile apps for offline use. This way, you can get accurate and reliable GPS tracking and navigation well out of cell and data service. With Topo Maps Plus, you can view your location on the map, add waypoints, trace new routes, measure distance and elevation, change and share your tracks with your friends, once you're back in service. Never get lost with Backroads Maps.
With one recipe and you hand it out to 12 people, and if it works.
But did you have some shitty elk calls and you just said, hey, I can do this a little bit better?
Making them for myself, I was just using basically turkey calls.
Send me over a few tips on turkey hunt.
Oh, my wife. some days some things work and other days they don't.
Yeah, I don't think he doesn't really care too much about it. He'd rather just...
We just use O-rings, though.
Oh, yeah. Maybe they call them a castration. But...
yeah, tables have turned.
There'd be nobody there to answer your call. Okay. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in to another episode of the Focus Hunting Podcast. On this episode, I'm joined by Steve Smith, founder of Smith Game Calls. Steve, he shares his story about how he got started making game calls and tells us all what goes into making these great calls. This episode of the Focus Hunting Podcast is brought to you by the Waypoint Outdoor Collective. Make sure you all head over to www.waypointtv.com. Go check them out and see everything this great group has going on.
Drifts into Alberta as well, so...
Yeah, no doubt. So you want to just get rolling here?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, today I'm joined by Steve Smith. For you don't know who Steve is, he's the owner of Smith Game Calls. We can get into that a little bit later. How are you doing today, Steve?
I'm doing awesome. How are you doing?
Good, buddy. Good. So maybe right off the get-go, we'll just get you to give a little introduction on yourself.
All righty. Well, my name's Steve. I'm an avid elk hunter. I've been hunting elk pretty well my entire life. Me and my wife, we started Smith Game Calls together back in 2016 and about 2015, and we were selling by the late 2016 season. And since then, we've slowly been growing our company. Now we're in about 100, a little over 100 stores across Canada, and it continues to grow each year.
So you said you've been hunting elk for quite a while. How long have you been calling elk?
Pretty well right from the get-go, or if not calling, watching my grandfather call them. So.
Oh yeah, he was a big elk hunter as well?
Yes, he was. He's the one who got me into it. He goes back to like the copper tube style calling as well too. So, but got to see it all.
Do you consider yourself a good elk caller?
I can fool elk sometimes, but to the human ear, I might think I'm okay. To an elk, it's anybody's guess. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't.
I hear that, man. I don't consider myself a great elk caller by any means. I've called elk, had him respond, but
I guess it depends who's judging you, eh?
Doubt. On the last episode, I had Corey Jacobson on, and I think it's safe to say he's a good elk caller.
Yes, he is. I've called against him in the World Elk Calling Contest down in Park City, Utah, and he is pretty darn good.
Oh, no kidding. What year was that?
I've gone 2000. And I'm bad with my years. So 2020 was canceled. So it would have been 2019 and 2018.
Wow. How did you fare there?
Not as good as I wanted to. I think there must have been 20 people in there. I would have placed somewhere in the middle.
Oh yeah.
I didn't make it to the final four. Their contest is going this July. I'm not sure it's open to the Canadians though, so I'm not sure we're going to be able to make it.
Yeah, who knows what's going on? Who knows if you can get back?
All this crap going on. I think we can get down there. I'm not sure about getting home though.
Yeah, stuck down there, which wouldn't be too bad. Pretty nice down there. Yeah, but they got those folks down there, man. They can call some elk, that's for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
So when did you start messing around with elk calls?
It's been about eight or more years now. We've been just kind of making them for ourselves. We didn't really have the intentions on turning it into a company. We were just kind of making them for me and my wife, brothers, friends. And it just slowly grew with popularity to where we were selling it to just kind of the local stores around town and neighboring cities. And then we finally decided to put a name on it and a brand and start growing it.
So backing up a bit, just started making them. Did you have some shitty elk calls and you just said, hey, I can do this a little bit better?
For the most part, yes. I know every caller kind of needs a kind of a tailored call for themselves, I suppose. There was some good ones on the market, and I felt maybe this one had a little too much tension. This one was a little too soft, and maybe it'd just be easier if I made my own for myself, and that's the route we took.
Oh, yeah. So what kind of call did you make for your first call, like a diaphragm call?
Yeah, they've all been the diaphragm style calls.
I've got tons of calls in my closet. It's never dawned on me for a second to start making calls, first of all, because, you know, I would have absolutely no idea where to start. I got a couple call of your diaphragm calls in my hand here, and I'm looking at them. I'm like, well, I mean, how did you put it all together? Like, where did you learn to do it?
Well, I was actually researching how they were making turkey calls. And if you're into it, you can buy these little hand jigs where they can supply you with what you need to make your own little turkey call. It's expensive to get into. I don't know if there's any way of actually making money doing it that way, but you can get like kind of these pre-made supplies, and they can send you latex and pre-fit tapes and stuff. And so I kind of, when I was making them for myself, I was just using basically turkey calls, and I was changing the tension of the latex and the thickness of the latex to kind of get those elk tones I wanted.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. And as we progressed and started turning it into a company, we started kind of manufacturing our own frames and our own tapes and kind of making everything a little more unique.
So that's what you started? You started with the elk calls, making elk calls?
Yes, elk.
That's pretty cool, man. So what's in there? There's just, what's inside a call? I'm looking at it now. We got the latex. It's sitting in a little metal aluminum.
Yeah, so it's got an aluminum frame, and the frames will come in different sizes, thickness. Width is the big one. And that frame is supposed to fit in your mouth a certain way, right? So some callers are going to need a bigger frame. Some callers are going to need a more narrow frame. So when you hear people talking about this one doesn't fit me, that one doesn't fit me, that usually just comes down to that frame width.
Oh yeah.
And then from there, that what that frame's doing is it's holding a certain tension on a latex, and you can play with the tension of the latex, the thickness of the latex, which is going to give you your kind of your softer, your harder tones, your high pitch, your low pitch, your cow calls, bull sounds. It's all kind of inside the spectrum of your thickness and stretch on those latexes.
Cool, man. So how many calls did you have to, how long did it take you to master it?
Well, that's the tricky thing is you really got to get a couple dozen people to play with them, right? I can almost make anything work to sound like an elk, I suppose. So if it works for me, it might not work for anybody, vice versa, right? So you come up with kind of, let's call it a recipe. You come up with one recipe and you hand it out to 12 people. And if it works for three, doesn't work for the rest, well, then you scratch it off the list and you try another one. And you got to make 12 of 300 different styles before you find one where 10 or 11 out of the 12 like it, right? And then you can kind of take that and start narrowing it down, go off that that similar call and just make micro changes to it till you get that perfect call. So in order to make one good call, I'd say sometimes it can land anywhere between 300 and 3,000 prototypes just to get that one ironed out.
No kidding. So you messed around with these for a little bit, then you started selling them. Who did you start selling them to right off the get-go?
Well, right off the get-go, we just opened up an e-commerce site and we were selling online.
Oh, yeah.
And we did that for a year or two. And then some of the local stores around Northern Alberta started to pick up on it, and they were placing their orders. And simultaneously, the e-commerce side grew, and the more e-commerce we did, the more stores ordered. And then, yeah, we slowly just started adding to it and adding to our SKU lists and adding to our marketing team. And it just keeps blowing up year after year. So
I imagine you probably were working out of your garage type deal at the beginning.
Yeah. Well, actually we just moved back into the garage. So we started at a home office and building calls at our kitchen table. And then we did that for a couple of years. We finally moved into a commercial building. We had a little warehouse and an office space, and that's how we did it for years. Now that we're in Calgary, we've got basically our entire garage. We just converted into a office workshop area, and it's a little bit tight, but it works for us.
Easy to keep an eye on everybody. It's good.
Yeah.
When you started selling, and what were you selling specifically? Just elk calls, or were you mixing it up with turkey calls as well?
No, we were just selling the elk calls. I've never actually been turkey hunting myself, even to this point. So to say I know how to make a turkey call is a stretch. We do have people on our team that are a little more rounded on the turkey side and even the predator side. So I'm predominantly just on the elk side of things.
Oh yeah. Maybe they can send me over a few tips on turkey hunting.
Yeah. I think I got my way around the turkey call now. I've never tried it on a real turkey though, but to the human ear, some people say it's all right.
You know, those things, I didn't have any luck, you know, those things. I don't know if it matters if you're a good caller or not, because, you know, I've been out in the bush, I've broken a stick, I've coughed and, you know, made all sorts of weird noises, and it just set on a good day, it just sets those buggers off. So who knows?
Yeah. Yeah. You never, I don't think anybody really knows how their minds work. We make predictions and we try and do our best to guess, but some days some things work and other days they don't.
Yeah, absolutely. So when you guys started pumping these out, how many calls did you have?
We started with five. We had five diaphragm style calls.
All elk calls.
Yeah, they were all elk calls. We haven't even had a bugle tube out at this point, just the five original diaphragm style calls, and that's all we sold there for about a year and a half. And when we started adding to it and got our own bugle tube manufactured, and we've just been adding to it every year. We've been taking a lot off of our SKU list as well, but we're constantly adding new things.
And these are all handmade diaphragm calls?
Yes, all the diaphragms are handmade.
Jeez. So how long does it take a guy to make one? I imagine you must get pretty good at it though, after doing it for a while, eh? Must be able to pump these out pretty good.
I throw a lot less out, I suppose. Yeah. So when we started, it was every third call was right in the garbage can. Now it's about maybe one out of 20 deserves a spot in the garbage can, but it's a little easier on the pocketbook. But yeah, it can take about three to five minutes to build one call.
So when you're building these, can you tell that it's a good call? You said you threw some of them out. I don't imagine you're sitting there testing every one yourself. So
no, but just cosmetic, or if there's a kink in the latex, or the tape wasn't applied properly, or the frame's got a malfunction or a bend to it, or any kind of imperfection, it just gets tossed.
So what's the difference? You know, there's a lot of different calls. Some make different tones, so like especially for elk call. And I guess, you know, some have two latex, some have one. What's really the difference in the latex? Like, is it tighter latex that'll give you a higher pitch, or is it softer actual material? How does that work?
Yeah. So the tighter the latex, the higher pitch it'll give you. The the lower the tension, it'll give you a deeper sound. So, and longevity as well. So if the tension is too low, the longevity is a little on the weaker side, which isn't a terrible thing either. So a cow call's significantly deeper than your bull sound. So on that cow call, the longevity won't last very long if you're making bull sounds on it, but it's almost catered to make those cow sounds anyway. So the less the tension, the deeper the sound, it's going to aim towards those cow sounds. And if you're only using it for cow sounds, it'll last a lifetime. If you're blowing bugles on a cow reed, it might only last you 20 minutes. But yeah, that's for the most part. The second latex on these calls, if you had a double reed or a triple reed, it won't actually change the sound all that much. It's more so the volume. So you can really lean into them and blow really hard and get that volume up. It's a lot harder to do. So you'll see more of the experienced callers using double and triple reed calls. But oh, yeah. It's just so that latex can stand the harshness, I guess.
It's funny you say that. You know, my kids, you know, they can all sing a tune with a diaphragm call. And my old man, for the life of him, he cannot make a peep out of a diaphragm call. It's funny. Just can't figure it out for some reason. I don't know what it is, but
I believe everyone can do it. They just got to practice enough. It's
yeah, I don't think he doesn't really care too much about it. He'd rather just have somebody else call him. So maybe he just plays like he doesn't know how to call. Deep yeah, down, he's probably at home wailing on it, I bet.
Oh yeah, just more shooter opportunities that way.
So what kind of call you use when you're out? What's worked for you in the past? What's your go-to call, your go-to diaphragm call?
I like the herd bull that we make. It's one of the little bit of the harder ones to use. It does last a little bit longer. And there's actually a few calls that I make for myself that I don't even sell, just because they're extremely difficult to use. So I was just kind of worried if we put them on the shelves and 9 out of 10 people will pull this call off and it won't work for them. So we just, some of them I don't even sell, and I just make for some of my friends and outfitters and such, and they seem to like them. Right. But out of the ones we do sell, I do like to use the herd bull, both the flat frame and the one with that raised pallet bridge on it as well.
So when you say harder, what do you mean harder? Like they're just harder to blow on, or?
Yeah, so it's going to require more air pressure, more tongue pressure. They're just overall harder to operate. So most people new to elk calling aren't going to be able to pull that call out of the package and make it work. So
Now you see some calls, I think you just mentioned it there, they got that little raised, what is that? A little piece of metal that's sitting up there.
So that's kind of in place there to help with your calling. So when the call is sitting in your mouth, it's actually supposed to be sitting with that latex side outward. And then you kind of want a little bit of a downward angle on it as well. So when you're putting tongue pressure, as soon as that latex hits the roof of your mouth, it'll cut that sound off, right? So you actually want that call to be sitting at closer to a 45 degree angle. So you'll see some, ours has that bridge. You'll see other guys will have a either a dome of some sort. And what that does is it just kind of pitches the call into a better placement, I suppose, right? So almost like training wheels, I guess.
Perfect. That's the one I need.
Yeah. They a lot of people prefer them. They're a little more comfortable. Yeah, it's not that they do anything that a flat frame can't. It's just, they're just a little bit easier. More people like them.
That's definitely the ones I need for sure. What do you call that again? What was that called?
We call it the raised pallet bridge.
So what else you got over there for elk calls?
We mostly just do the diaphragms. For cow calls, we have an external reed. We got a couple different versions of an external reed or an open reed cow call. Some built out of acrylic, some built out of plastic. The acrylic is it comes with a higher price tag. It's more for your diehards than your just casual elk hunters. But yeah, we make a few different types. We've been making a open reed bugle tube here. It's been in the test for 3 years now. We haven't released it out to the public yet, I'm hoping in the next, it won't be out this hunting season, but maybe 2022, we might have something on the shelf.
Cool. So these external reeds, you guys making these all in-house?
Not the whole process. No, a lot of it is, we get manufactured. It's all manufactured in Canada, mostly in Calgary actually, but, it's all gone through like CNC machinists and such, and they'll send us the parts once they're done. And we've got some stuff that's injection molded and blow molded. The Mylar reeds we cut ourselves. We've got a big press that'll cut those Mylar reeds out, and then it's just kind of putting them together and packaging.
So when you're sourcing these out in the beginning, what was it like? Was it hard to find somebody? Sure, like you said, you wanted to keep it in Canada, but was it hard sourcing all this out? Because I imagine you had to have a own quantity. Like, you can't just call up and say, yeah, Hey, we need one of these.
So that was the tough part, and we didn't if you had a lot of money in your pocket and you wanted to jump with 2 feet in, it would be doable, but we started small and we scaled up. So just trying to make like those cow calls wasn't within our reach for the first couple of years, just because, like you said, with the quantities, right, we didn't want to go buy or get 5,000 cow calls built and we sell to 3 stores. That just wouldn't make sense, right? So we just, it was a long road, but we scaled up to do it, just starting with the diaphragms and bugle tubes. And as we expanded and it made a little more sense and our sales volumes increased, then so did our products.
Yeah, because those external recalls, they last they last a lot longer than the diaphragm call. I don't know how often other people go through them, but I mean, I'm always chewing on those things and I'm cutting latex. I go through quite a bit of them. So the only thing that I find on those external reeds that really goes is that little that rubber band on them you got to replace once in a while. What's that? What do they call that? A castration band, I think, is that called?
I suppose you could use it for that. We just use O-rings though.
Oh yeah. Yeah, I heard somewhere they use actual castration bands on those. Maybe they call them a castration band. That's tough, yeah, man.
It's just a little rubber band. They're replaceable. You can replace it with almost anything you can find in a hardware store, even. Or if you want the same one we put on, it's just, we've got lifetime warranty on all that stuff as well. So as long as you don't lose it, we'll fix anything that's broken. You just have to mail it in.
Now you guys got turkey calls over there. What's harder to make? Is it a turkey call or an elk diaphragm call?
I don't even have an answer for that. I don't make the turkey calls.
Seems like there's a little more going into a turkey call.
It takes a little bit longer to build the turkey call. You got that. Most of them are triple reeds or double reeds. I don't think. Well, we don't make any single reed turkey calls. I don't know if anybody does, but I know our guys that build the turkey calls, there just seems more to it, right? You got the extra reed, you've got some cutting to do, whether you want the V cut or whatever, right? It just takes longer.
Yeah, definitely. So these little cuts, your guys making these, they cut them themselves, or is that all done by a machine? Because
that's all done by hand.
No kidding, eh? Because those are precise. Wow.
Yeah, maybe. And that's why it's important. We don't have too many call builders, so.
Yeah.
So the same guy who's making all those cuts, he's going to cut every single one of them.
Yeah. So these calls was the same sort of thing. You had to, just play around. You guys had to just play around with them at the beginning and see what works and what doesn't work.
For the most part. But with our turkey side, we've hired that out. So we've got guys that work for us that focus just on the turkey calls. Our marketing team will kind of take the whole company in a whole, but when it comes down to the building, it's we've got a turkey department for that.
Yeah, because I mean, even understanding what each cut does, I mean, that's a skill in itself. I mean, I've been blowing on these diaphragms for, I can't even remember, and I mean, I don't even know what they all do, right? I have a particular one I like, and I was using your calls this spring, I just didn't have any birds to try it on. So
yeah, I think this might have been our best year yet for turkey sales. They seem to have been pretty popular.
Yeah, I kind of, it feels like turkey hunting's getting more popular, you know.
Yeah,
the more people you talk to, it just seems like more guys are getting into it.
Yeah, I'd love to start getting into it. It's pretty hard to get a turkey tag in Alberta though.
Well, you guys have to, it's not open out there, right?
No, it's some kind of lottery draw.
Yeah, what about elk hunting out there? Is that, do you guys have a general open season tag for that over there?
Yeah, it's it changes drastically throughout the province. Up in northern Alberta, you can start bow hunting them as early as August 25th. And then rifle season starts September, don't quote me on it, but I want to say September 17th. And it's open, most of the zones are open general tag, over the counter. And then as you start coming down south, the seasons start opening up September 1st. But the archery seasons will go till October 31st and just have November 1st to November 30th for rifle season. But a lot of the zones to hunt bull elk with a rifle will be on draw. It just changes so much depending on where you're at. I mostly spend my time up north during archery season. Once the rifles come out, I tend to get out of there. It turns into World War III. So
yeah, it seems like the early archery season, you can get away with a little more. As soon as there's guns ablaze in those elk, they seem to learn pretty quick.
Yeah, they tighten up.
Yeah, sure. Definitely. How was your elk season last year?
Really good, actually. Yeah, we had an awesome year. It was seven weeks straight, no days off. We covered all over northern Alberta, central Alberta, down into southern BC, and finished it off up in northern Alberta again.
Nice. Who are you hunting over in BC here with?
Shane Palmer with Saddle Axe Outfitters.
Oh, nice. That's a good gig when you can get out hunting elk for seven weeks.
Yeah, it's done that a few years now. It takes a toll on you, and I think it probably takes some years off the end of your life doing that. It flies by so fast, right? It's just, and it's not that we're in one camp for 7 weeks either, right? We'll kind of set up for 4 or 5 days, and then you're back to the truck. You get to go to a hotel for a night and clean up and off to the next destination. And
so yeah, well, it's good. You can get away from, you can get out of the office for that long. Your wife's okay with you being gone for 7 weeks too?
I got to put a lot of work on her. It's gotten a little easier too. We've started to move into distribution as well. So if our distribution companies are stocked up, then I know that we're safe to take some time away from the office. As long as they have the product to move, then they're moving the product. We just have to make sure we have a high enough inventory. And if you don't, then you just have to cancel your plans, back to the shop and start building.
Yeah. So how many of these can you pump out in a day? Like one guy, like yourself, how many diaphragm calls can you pump out a day?
We could probably 500 or 600.
Wow.
Maybe, like if you really sun up to sun down, no breaks, you could probably I mean, the longer you do it, the more ones you're gonna start throwing in the trash for sure. But if you're really focused on it, yeah.
Wow.
Grind it away, maybe that many.
So all summer you're just pumping out these elk calls so you can get those 7 weeks off for elk on
there. Yeah, I'm not the only call builder either. So we do make sure our inventory's up. But just like me, once elk season starts, a lot of our call builders they're gone, right? So we just want to make sure our numbers are up and our distribution companies are stocked up, and that way when somebody wants calls, they can get their hands on them.
Yeah, you know, that's one thing, I guess, when you're in the hunting business, it's tough to keep all your employees at work throughout hunting season, eh?
Yeah, well, they disappear. They're all gone September. We'll be lucky to start seeing them mid-October again. A few guys will have a successful early season and get get somebody back to the shop by first week of September. And
you got somebody, you got at least one person who sticks around and just answers the phone. And
does my wife.
So you're going to have to give me some tips here, because if you can talk your wife into staying back at the shop doing orders and answering phone calls while you're out chasing elk for 7 weeks, you got something going on.
I just lucked out.
Yeah.
I guess I just lucked out, and she's pretty busy too. So we keep her going.
Yeah. But
she's doing all the clothing and branding as well. And she's ventured out to do that for a few other companies as well. Just small brands and a TV show and stuff. So,
well, she sounds like a rock star. I got a rock star old lady too, which makes all my hunting definitely easier. Without her, I wouldn't be able to get away with it. That's for sure.
Oh yeah.
So you got
it wisely, I guess.
You guys, you got kiddos running around out there?
Yeah, I've got one son and another one on the way.
Is he an elk caller already?
He's only three now. He's very interested in it. I've never taken him. I've taken him out on a few small, like, local rifle hunts. I've never taken him out on a bow hunt before. But maybe in the next couple of years.
Yeah, it's hard to get the kids into bow hunting there when they're that young. That's for sure. I mean, even, you know, up until they're around 9 or 10, they start getting a little stronger. Then you start to see a difference. That's for sure.
Yeah, yeah. Just bow hunting in general, like, it can be a little more dangerous with the bears too. And I'm not overly comfortable just packing a toddler around when you're trying to be quiet and, you know, they're making noise. Yeah. So
yeah,
I haven't brought them out bow hunting yet.
When I hunt by myself, I generally hunt by myself. And I find when I hunt with my dad now, you know, I love hunting with my dad, but he slows you down. And I find it funny because I hunt with my son and it's the same thing, although I love hunting with my son. And I know at a time there must've been a point where my dad was thinking the same thing about me, being like, man, this guy's just slowing me down. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tables have turned.
What other kind of calls are you guys pumping out over there?
So another popular one is our Predator lineup. They've been probably our second best seller is anything in the Predator line. So we do have the diaphragm style Predator calls, open reed howler. We've got a couple closed reed distress calls. And those things have just been flying off the shelf lately. So, and very much like the turkey side, we've got a few guys working for us who just stick to the Predator side. And that's kind of just what they do.
These diaphragm Predator calls, what kind of calls are they? They like a rabbit distress call?
They're surprisingly pretty universal. So it would come down to the user. If you're a good enough caller, but rabbit and distress calls, you can imitate all your coyote sounds as well, so your yips and howls, and they can kind of just do it all. They're pretty good. We're not the only company that makes them, but those, if you're good enough with the diaphragm, those diaphragms really are pretty superior to anything else out there when it comes to just how universal they are. I mean, it's hard to beat an electronic call. Those things are pretty universal, but the coyotes figure those out eventually too. So,
yeah, and I've used electronic calls, and they're a pain in the ass to drag around, and then batteries die. But the diaphragm call—it's definitely the way to go. It allows all your hands to be free and be mobile. Those are the way to go for sure. So these diaphragm calls for the Predator calls, what are they like? Are they the same sort of thing? A single reed, double reed, triple reed?
They're double reed calls, and we build them based on that raised pallet ridge frame. So they've got the upgraded tape, and they've got that raised pallet as well. We have three different double reeds.
So what's making that sound? Again, is that just how the tension in the latex?
Yeah, so they've got the tension in the latex, and if you're when you're using that diaphragm, you're funneling that air between your tongue and the latex. So the air will actually cause that latex to vibrate, and when you put tension on that latex, the vibrations will be a little bit tighter, which will change your pitch. So it's all about putting that airflow in the right spot and making that latex vibrate.
Man, I'll have to get my hands on some of those. Try them out for bear hunting.
You know what? They were selling pretty good last spring. We started selling them to a bunch of bear hunters, especially down in southern BC. They picked them up. It's not very popular in Alberta because most people are just baiting here. But back down in southern BC, a lot of these guys were buying the diaphragms as well as the closed reed distress calls, and killing bears with them. So
yeah, the call's the way to go. I've talked to some folks who can do cold calling, where they just start calling and the bears come to them, but I'm not that good. I don't know how they do that, but when I see one, I can wail on those calls and they come running. I'll have to check those out. What else? Yeah. What else we got over at Smith Game Calls?
Another popular item is our deer call. It's not our biggest seller by no means, but we do have a closed reed deer call. It's been pretty popular the last 2 years. So our deer call, what makes it different is we're using an aluminum tone board instead of a plastic tone board. And then our Mylar reed has a rivet in it as well. And so when you blow on it, not only does that Mylar vibrate, but it's using that metal rivet hitting against the aluminum, kind of metal on metal instead of Mylar on plastic. And it's so when you move the O-ring up and down, it changes the pitches and tones too. So we only have one deer call, and you can use it as a doe, or like a doe bleat or a buck grunt, just by moving the O-ring up and down.
Right. Yeah, that's what that predator call I have. It does the same thing. You move that that band up or down, it makes different calls. But no, I'm excited to try one of these diaphragm predator calls out.
Yeah, we've been selling a lot of those this year.
Those deer calls, they must be a big hit out there with the whitetail folk, eh?
Yeah, we sell quite a few of them. You know, I probably sell more in the States than we do up in Alberta.
Oh, no kidding, eh?
I don't know why. I don't even know if a lot of people are using deer calls in Alberta. There's a lot of truck hunters out there, a lot of just sitting in tree stands in hot spots, and kind of seems to be about 80% of the whitetail hunting up here anyways.
Yeah, a lot of private land out there. I was out antelope hunting last year in southern Alberta around Medicine Hat. Couldn't believe how much private land there was.
Yeah, there's quite a bit.
And just open. You can see for miles. Crazy.
It's going to be a big game changer this year. Just the new area for me. I moved from northern Alberta down south here, and it just seems to be, unless you get into the mountains there doesn't seem to be a whole lot of crown land around. I hear even the private land super hard to get permission on. So, and aside from that, I've got no idea how the elk move around this area either. So it's going to be a learning game for me this year.
Locating them is all the work, is locating those.
Yeah.
Locating the elk. Been pretty lucky around here, but it took a while to get it figured out, that's for sure.
Yeah. Well, I can start bow hunting a week early up in northern Alberta. So I still plan on going up there for August 25th. And if I get lucky, I might take out early, and then it won't be so stressful trying to find the elk around this new area.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I was talking to Bernsey there, Adam Pangborn from the Kootenai Elk Hunting Association, and maybe we'll have to get you out here for an elk hunt.
That would be awesome. Are you in the Kootenai area, right?
I'm not in the Kootenai area, but it's no problem for me to go hunting over there. Hunting with any elk hunting association kind of feels like cheating. So I think you come out, we're going to have you and him. It'd be we'll have an advantage for sure, I think.
Oh, absolutely. It's southern BC is definitely one of my favorite places to hunt. It's a lot harder than most people think too. It can get tough.
Yeah, there's you gotta put the miles on your boots anyway, but yeah. You know, Adam there, he sends me quite a few pictures of a lot of elk, so, and I think he's done pretty good for himself in the elk hunting category over the years, so he's a good guy to go with.
Awesome. Yeah, and is he out hunting in the kind of the mountain areas out there?
Yeah, he hunts. He's out in the Castlegar area, so there's tons of elk out there. Tons of
Perfect.
elk,
That's what I love. You tend to run into less people once you get back in the mountains there too. Up northern Alberta, you can walk for 3 days and think you're alone, and there's more people.
Yeah, I hunt around like right bordering. Typically, I hunt bordering the Okanagan area and the Kootenays, and that's not far from that area. And I've had some pretty good luck with pulling some elk out of there. So, but it's a lot of work, but that's damn worth it. That's for sure.
Yeah, well, we can try and make something work. I'm probably going to be down hunting with Shane Palmer with Saddle Axe Outfitters again as well.
Right,
I don't
where's he out
know.
of?
He's out of the East Kootenays, kind of by Creston.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, he does pretty well out there. I've been hunting with him for a few years now, and if I am lucky enough to tag along with him this year, it'd be nice if we can get our dates to line up and just jump from one to the next. But I'm also only allowed one tag in BC, so
Yeah,
if I
for sure.
can't shoot an elk with you guys, I'll definitely come and do some calling.
Yeah, cool, man. Well, I don't know what's going to go on or how the outfitters are going to do this year with the border closure. Hopefully, I haven't heard yet if it's going to stay closed or not, so I don't know, but hopefully it opens up. And I mean, if there's not this year, we can always do it next year. We can always line something up for sure. But yeah, it'd be a lot of fun, man.
Oh, I think it would be.
Cool. So where can everybody pick up some of these great calls from Smith Game Calls?
Well, your local store should have them, and if they don't, you can put the bug in their ear and you can go to www.smithgamecalls.ca or .com. And just note our website is under construction right now. You'll still be able to get on. We've got a new website launching and should be done in about a month. So we're really excited about that. But yeah, you can order anything online if your local retailer doesn't own or carry it. And also our marketing team is launching on Amazon here in the next month or two as well. So yeah, you just type Smith Game Calls in Google, you'll find it for sale somewhere.
Yeah, and get them early because ordering them in the fall or not, there'd be nobody there to answer your call.
Yeah, I don't plan on being around, but our distribution team is pretty good too. So I'm hoping if we have our inventory up and I can sneak out, then you'll be able to find them no problem.
Yeah, awesome, man. Okay, do you have a call kicking around there anywhere?
No, I'm actually in a half put together shop right now. Wow. We're still moving in. I don't know if I've got nothing even close to me.
It's all good, buddy. I was gonna get you to hit us up with one of your calls, but we'll have to leave that for next time.
Yeah, maybe next time.
Okay, man. Thanks, Steve. We'll talk to you later.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for having me.